Hell yeah.
Woo.
It's still unsettling. We've recorded so many times at this point. Hi, Elka.
Hey.
Hello, Elka. How are you?
Hello, Elka.
I'm good. Yeah.
I got distracted by TikTok for a solid hour, so I didn't listen to the episode. I just read it.
Yeah, I've read it. I was like, ooh.
I re-listened to it.
I was going to actually listen to it, and then I opened TikTok and well.
I think this is like my fifth time actually hearing the episode.
Are you okay?
I mean, it's not like one after the other, but jury's still out on that one.
Yeah. I've come to the realization that I actually don't like this episode at all. My stupid little story intro for the start of the podcast, which I've totally built up, but I think it's very funny. So we're going to do something lighthearted before we get into this nonsense. Not a D&D game, but it's like another tabletop RPG with my friends every Wednesday. And we play this system called Masks, which is like powered by the apocalypse. You're like young superheroes. So it's really fun, and it's like, you know, great old time. And the character I play is... So in Masks, each character is like a different kind of trope of superheroes. So you have like the prodigy, who's like... the like young prodigy of another superhero, and then you have like the delinquent, who's like your rebellious teen, and then you have like the brain, who's like a master hacker that's made some like big evil monster. Masks is like, anyone listening to this that's into RPGs, like give Masks a shot, like it's really fun. It's like a nice system, it's quite like beginner friendly. But the character I'm playing is the Doomed. And so the Doomed's whole deal is that they have like a nemesis, and they have a doom, which is like related to their powers. And they have like a countdown timer to solve their doom, or like kind of figure out what's going wrong with it. And if they kind of max out on their, like, they're called doom signs, but if they max out basically on like a kind of a track, they die, and you have to roll a new character.
Oof, yikes. Intense?
Yeah. Very intense. Very fun to play. So the character I'm playing, her name's Martha, and I won't go into too much kind of details, but basically she has amnesia for about a week amnesia from like a year ago, and in that period of time, like, her family went missing, and she like gained these powers of like mind manipulation and like memory manipulation and stuff. Very Scarlet Witchy, now that I've started watching WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
Then about a week ago, we were playing a game, and kind of over the time, we've been like figuring out more stuff about like Martha's powers, like as a group, and kind of the enemy she made. And one of the things in this kind of the lore that our GM has made is that there's these things called like the mind equations, and I won't go into like the details. So basically, they're like weird alien like formulations for how the universe works, and if like no humans ever read them, and then Martha starts like seeing these symbols everywhere, and she remembers that like during her week when she was in like she got captured by like the bad guy and was like made learn all these equations off.
Mm-hmm.
Getting captured and made to learn equations? Oh no.
I know, it's my
worst nightmare.
Yeah. So this happens, and our DM is like one of the characters kind of goes like, yeah, anyone who's ever learned off all the equations, or we think, because no one's ever gotten exposed to all of them, but anyone who's ever kind of got exposed to a certain amount of them, they've either gotten into a vegetative state and died, or they become a god and they have to be like taken out. And that's what's happening. Yep. That's what's happening to this character. And then about 2 minutes after this, my screen just went funny. About 2 minutes after this, so we're like talking. So we're in a Discord call. So you know how Discord works. You have like your face and everyone else's face, especially if you're doing like a video call.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Everyone's face goes red. So all at once, everyone's face just goes like red. And they can still, they're still moving. It's not like the screens have gone red. I can see everybody moving. I can see like the pictures in the background of their rooms and all this stuff. It's just everything is like, it's only like the red channels coming through. And I'm like, okay, obviously my video call has gone gunked up. And it's like that for about 15 seconds. And I kind of wait to see if it corrects itself. And then everyone just kind of goes flack. And I'm like, all right, okay. Video call has gone funny. I'm just going to pop in to the channel, like our kind of general chat, and be like, oh, my thing's gone funny. I'm just going to like jump out of the call and come back into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I go into the general channel. And all the letters are flickering on the screen. They're all flickering, and they're like, they're not like, it's not like they're flickering like, you know, an A is like not showing up and then re-showing up. They're all flickering through like different levels of kind of saying like kind of symbols and stuff. And Jesus, I just kind of, we're like, we're on the channel, and I just go, ah! And I was like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, my Discord's possessed. I'm like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I'll send you a screenshot. I'm gonna post into the channel now the screenshot I sent them.
Oh, crikey.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So listeners, as you cannot see this, we'll post this on Twitter or whatever, but the only words you can see, it's literally just like random letters and stuff. Like, even it's not just like the channel, it's like the voice channel has changed, like everyone's names have changed as well. True. So the only words you can see are up, ascend, fear, laughing my ass off, like LMAO, and insane.
That is... Wow.
Yeah.
I've got a... If you're done, Hannah.
Hmm?
I've got a horror story, kind of, from what happened in our last session. Uh-huh. So I play Vampire the Masquerade every week.
Yeah.
And I was... There's, like, stuff happening, vampire hunters, that we need to find where they're staying, all that kind of stuff. So my character decides to go into the sewer tunnels, because we think some of the hunters might have been there. But he decides to go on his own, because the rest of the party had to go somewhere, like, talk to people, and I'm playing an Nosferatu, so I'm ugly as fuck, and I can't, like, be seen by people. So I'm like, sure, I'll go do these tunnels, they need to be done anyway, might as well do it now, instead of just sitting around. So on my own, I go into these abandoned sewer tunnels, where it's like super dark, and I have to roll to like see what's going on, except I fail badly. So the storyteller is like, yeah, you're just walking in the dark, and then there's no ground under your feet, and you fall down. And I manage to catch myself on the edges of this hole and climb out. And so, yeah, that was fine. And then I remember that I have a phone with a flashlight on it. So I turn on the flashlight, and I shine it into the pit I just fell in. And there's, like, a pair of eyes looking right at me.
I don't like
so
that.
So, like, oh, yikes, this is, like, out of character, and it's freaking me out in character, too. So, I, like... Okay, I'm gonna book it. I'm just running at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then the storyteller is like, in this whispery voice that I can't do, but it was like this creaky, whispery voice, that thing in the pit was crawling out of it and telling me to like stop and wait and don't run away. So like, I have no way. I'm just gonna keep running with just my phone flashlight while don't this thing run. Is chasing me. That's very clearly not human. So I run for a while, and then it tackles me. Yeah, like that, Nigel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Nigel.
I thought like that.
Will I do the introduction so we can get started on this, bullshit? Not bullshit, I just dislike this episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Archive Admirers, your show recapping all things the Magnus Archives by Rusty Quill. I am joined, as always, with my lovely co-host, Nigel.
Hello.
Faustina.
Mm.
And Elka.
Hi.
So, a few announcements for the top of this episode. Number one, we're talking about Squirm in this episode. So, if you have not listened to Squirm, just know there is a, like, non-explicit sexual content in this episode. So, if that's something that's not your jam, totally understand. Feel free to check out. Because of that, we'll probably will be discussing sex and the possibility of non-consensual stuff. It's just the kind of nature of this story. So again, if you're not your jam, totally cool.
Follow trigger warning for that.
Yeah, trigger warning for that. And my shameless plugging. The second thing is, this is our second recording of this episode because Hannah was a dumb shit and didn't save the recording properly. So yeah, just keep that in mind. If there's, we say stuff in this and then next week's episode sounds a bit kind of weird because we're referring to stuff that we've already referred to or whatever, that's why we recorded episode 7, which is going to come out in time to be determined. We've already recorded that one and we only realized afterwards, so in case.
And we thought in the most Magnus way possible, we would present to you something which on the face seemed identical, but only a very few people could tell that it wasn't what it originally was.
Mm-hmm. I guess the third thing, because it's a good time to kind of say this rather than saying it halfway through the episode, we have a slight change of format, ladies and gents and everything in between. Elka has gone and caught up to the... Are you on episode 195 now? Or
I
what is this?
I still have to listen to the last one.
Oh yeah, me too.
I got to listen to it a day early because I'm a patron. I'm a patron of Rusty Quill.
I'm also ahead. I'm an episode ahead. So it is now only going to be myself that is banished to the spoiler pit, spoiler-free pit anyway. So just so you know. Now that we're 10 minutes into announcements, like I'm a school principal coming back after a very rowdy midterm, we can launch into our wonderful episode transcripts and summaries as read by Nigel. Wahoo!
Okay, so this episode, Squirm, is statement of Timothy Hodge regarding his sexual encounter with one Harriet Lee and her subsequent death. So this episode
just like
deep sigh.
I try not to drink when we're recording. I do have a glass of wine with me right now because I'm just like
fair.
This episode. Oh god. Okay. Deep breath. So this episode is the most aggressively straight episode of Magnus possibly ever. I can't think of a single straighter thing in all of Magnus.
No.
So it's about this guy Timothy, who he's like a graphic designer, and like he, you know, he's got his own flat and he lives there, and it gives him a lot of time to focus on like big projects, and then when he's finished a big project he gives himself a couple days or a week off, and he likes to go clubbing because oh good lord. And so he decides he's going to go to a club to celebrate having finished his latest big job, and decides he's not going to go into the city, but he goes instead to like a local club called the Dog Star. And he goes there and he's having a few drinks, and then he's like, oh, I know I'm not unattractive, so I'm always on the lookout if people want to like get with me. And it's and and so he's there and he eventually sees like this goth girl, like the goth girl of his dreams, basically. She's got like dyed henna red hair and she's got fishnet tights, and he's like, Oh. And so then they eventually lock eyes and they start dancing for a bit, and he describes her dancing as very weird, like writhing instead of dancing. And then eventually she says, like, do you want me? And he's like, yeah. And they leave. And as they're, so she spent the whole time like looking, well, she's in the club looking around furtively. And then they leave and they're out in the street and she's like shivering and looking around nervously. And he's like, that's a bit weird, but I guess I'm going to continue on. And so they get back to his apartment. He lives like 3 stories up and he locks the door and he has an extra deadbolt. And then she starts to look relieved. But then he gets her like a glass of water and she becomes more nervous again. And he's like, tell me, you know, what's up? Some quite obviously something bothering you. And so she tells this story where basically she was walking home and walked past a street where there was like a woman lying face down on the ground. And it was, you know, it was fairly close to where she lived. So she went, you know, she was probably not as aware of things as she maybe should have been. And go, you know, she went up and she was like, sorry, are you okay? Do you need help? And this lady jumped up, grabbed her by the shoulders and like shoved her into the wall. And Harriet, that's the lady, felt like she had been stabbed. And then when she woke up, though, there was no blood. The lady was gone. So that was a bit weird. But she felt then like she could see this lady in the red dress everywhere. You know, and she tried to report it to the police to go to the hospital, but every time she got close, her skin started getting really, really itchy, and she felt sick and all this. And so Timothy is like, oh, that's, you know, that's really bad. And then she kisses him, and then they have sex. Yeah.
He's so disappointed. And then they have
Yep, that's a thing. And then as they're lying there afterwards, and he's lying on her shoulder, and he feels something move under the skin of her shoulder, and she passes no comment on it, only to scratch where it was. And then she like doubles up in pain, and she's like moaning and like just very, very much in pain. So he's like, oh, I'll run to the medicine cabinet in the bathroom, see if I've got any like ibuprofen or something. Like, what? On the level of measured responses, no. He's in there, and then all of a sudden the noises stop from the bedroom, and he's like, oh. And then he hears this awful sound, like an egg being dropped onto a stone floor, and he's like, that's probably not good. So then he goes to the bedroom afterwards, and it's all dark, and all he can see through the sliver of light that's coming through the curtain is there's a lump on the bed where Harriet used to be, and everything, all the bed is like covered in red, and everything is carpeted with tiny little silver worms. And so then he has his first like semi-rational thought, which is burn the place down.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it. That's where the statement ends. Hold on. I apologize if I seem very low energy there. That would just...
No, that's what Timothy Todd does to people.
We're all just the awesome with straight people.
I apologize on behalf of the straights. I hate them too. You
know? If we had any, like, homophobic listeners at this point, I feel like this is the moment they don't like that, never mind.
Yeah, this is it. We've lost them.
The boys, you got 7 episodes in.
Successfully weeded them out.
Okay. There's one other thing about this that's like the archivist thing, which is some mention of this woman called Jane Prentice, but we'll get into that kind of in the next bit where we're doing spoilery stuff. And yeah, I always feel like the kind of post archival bits are like this is separate, or you know. But yeah, I don't like this one. And not because it's not well written. It's very well written, and it's so well written, and it's so, of all of them that have happened so far, besides the weird worm shit, it's the most likely thing that could happen.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
feels like a victim, a witness statement or something. If that makes sense. I don't know.
It's yeah. Just, there's...
Yeah.
It's also like okay, in general, all of the statements take a long time to build up to, like, the spooky stuff. But in this instance, I feel like the narrator is very much focused on, like, oh yeah, we were dancing and then we had sex, and then only, like, as an afterthought, hey, she exploded into worms.
Yeah.
I feel like he kind of wants to really explain how he got to the point where he burns his house down. Like, he wants to justify the whole, hey, I lit a fire and burned my house down thing.
Yeah.
I feel like he wants to justify why he didn't notice that something was wrong with her earlier. Like,
yeah.
Really wants everyone to think that everything was fine. Everything was totally fine up to the point when she literally exploded. Everything was totally fine and normal. And it's just, I think that's just a weird and kind of creepy thing. Not in a Magnus Archive sense of creepy, but in the general sense of,
yeah.
Be like, no, dude, everything
yeah,
isn't. Stop saying. Or making it seem like everything is fine, because it clearly wasn't, and you should have noticed.
Yeah, that seems to be a big part of it, because, like you say, like, this one takes a whole long time to actually get to the spooky stuff, but it's really weird, because, like you say, Harriet exploding into worms comes almost as an afterthought, but it's really weird, because a lot of the episode is taken up by him recounting what Harriet told him. So in a sense, like, a lot of what happens isn't really, like you get the sense that it isn't actually important in terms of the narrative, because all that's actually important to the spooky stuff which is happening is Harriet gets attacked in an alleyway and then she explodes. So a lot of it is just, like, it's Timothy going, like, no, it's not, like, it's not my fault. It's not my fault.
Yeah.
I burnt down my house,
yeah.
Yes, but what happened to no, it's not my fault. Which is,
yeah.
It's a strange dynamic to have.
I do wonder, I do wonder if we'd have a different view on this. If we weren't so uncomfortable with Timothy, like, still having sex with her, despite her being clearly not okay. Because that's the thing that makes me completely, like, not like him. Because she's clearly upset, and he's like, I wasn't going to take advantage, but yeah, we had sex. Like, that is really what makes me dislike him.
Yeah.
If he'd said, like, okay, sure, you can sleep on the couch and I'm gonna go to my bed, and then she'd exploded. If we wouldn't mind that he takes such a long time to lead up to it.
I think him not having sex with her completely changes it then.
Because,
like, you know, it's... he's still, like, he's, like, fundamentally what he's doing is, he is, and, like, they go, he goes into it in this, where he's, like, oh, I went for, like, young girls and stuff, and I think it says in it that he's, like, he's mid-30s, so he's, like, oh, I purposely go for, like, younger women, like, college students, that's my preferred type, and he's, like, I like the goth girls that have kind of stayed by themselves and stuff, so, like, he likes going for younger, isolated women. And then he, like, brings her back to her house. She's clearly not okay, because she's, like, looking over her shoulder and stuff. And he, like, makes a point to be, like, well, she instigated it. And I'm, like, okay, fine.
Yeah, like, she said she was okay with it, but, you know, she quite clearly, like, in an emotional state where she's not okay. And, like, any rational, discerning adult would be, like, I mean... There's that scene in Austin Powers where the lady is drunk and she wants to have sex with Austin Powers, and he's like, no, you're drunk. Like, that, no. Like, you're not in a place to give informed consent. And, like, Austin Powers can do that, but apparently Timothy Hodge can't.
But, like, yeah, oh my God, this reminds me. Double because, well, if she's not... It's weird because she's just really upset, which is... Like, where is the line for you can't give consent anymore? If you're drunk, yeah, no. You can't give consent. Don't sleep with drunk people. But if she's upset and keeps repeating, it's fine, I want this.
Yeah, well, she's
like,
difficult.
I mean, they were at the club, and she's upset, and also, like, convinced she's seeing the person who mugged her. All over the place, so...
It's a bit... Yeah. That's why it's Timothy Hodge should just not have done anything. He's a bit of a sleazy guy, even though technically he hasn't really. You could say that he
It's a gray area, really.
Do anything wrong, but still, you know, I wouldn't want to be friends with you.
No, like,
I think that's what's great about the horror in this episode is that, like, everything else, you've had stuff that is like. Horrifying because it's like the horror of like a creepy monster, or like, you know, you've got like people disappearing, you've got coffins, more people disappearing, fucking teeth man, and then like creepy ass book. This is the the bit where it's like, until you get to the bit where she's telling the story of, okay, this weird mugging thing happened, it's very much just like a normal story about like a man picking up a younger woman. And I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't find that scary, but I guess, like, I don't know, being someone who's like a young, I'm 22, am I still, because being someone who's like a young woman, I'm still a baby, like, it really sounds like a lot of bad stories you hear on nights out, and kind of the horror of being a woman instead of inverted commas. I think that's why I don't like it. I think it sets off a bit of my, like, defense mechanism.
Also, up until now, like, the previous 5 episodes, we're very clearly just, like, supernatural horror. Like, weird shit.
I was
going
to say the same.
While this kind of horror is really personal for, I'm assuming, pretty much anyone who is a fab, and also I'm sure AMAP people also experience this. So it is a very personal, like, close-hitting kind of horror.
There was a little bit of that in episode 3, where she didn't want Graham to see where she lived because she was on a street with him alone at night. Like, you know, she quite clearly says that there was no one around. And so, like, letting this random dude, who was quite clearly a bit weird, you know where she lived, wasn't something she was okay with up until, you know, like, they went down the same street and they lived, like, opposite. But even then, she was, like, she wanted to make sure he didn't know which one her flat was. And, like, so both, like, that part of episode 3 and the whole picking someone up at a club and, like, you know, being afraid of, like, walking at night. Like, that's a really specific type of horror, and it's a bit sad that horror exists. Like, a lot of horror exists from common fears, like the fear of the dark and what lives there, you know? That's your spooky monsters. But the fear that, like, we're talking about here is something that's arisen because of a society, and people have allowed that to continue. And that's really just fucked up.
Yeah. I also feel like it just isn't what you're looking for if you go and listen to the Magnus Archives. Like, you're looking, you listen to it because you're into the spooky, creepy monsters kind of horror. That's why this episode to me also feels so disconnected and weird, because it's, the focus isn't so much the supernatural, but that humans just being dicks to each other.
Yeah.
And that's not, for me, that's not what I want to listen to, or I want to, you know? I wasn't looking for it.
I'd look at true crime if I wanted to hear this.
Like, no.
God. It's like, this is BuzzFeed Supernatural, it's not BuzzFeed Unsolved. Get this shit out of here.
Johnny, get your distinctions right.
No, I was just thinking about it there when you guys were saying, like, this is not the type of horror that I want from Magnus. And I think something about it that I also think is very interesting is the narrator of this is Timothy, who's just man who's, like, picked up Harriet. But the supernatural kind of entity, if you will say, is Harriet. And it's so interesting that it's kind of, like, her... When you're first listening to this, you have no idea what Harriet's deal kind of is. Like, you have no idea the worm thing is going to happen at the end where she, like, fucking cracks or whatever. And then when you listen to it back, there's, you know, because it is well written. I'm not going to deny it. It is quite well written. You can see traces of kind of, like, the foreshadowing of it. But there's definitely something kind of there. And I don't know enough about, like, horror or feminist tropes for, like, the woman in this who is the one who's actually suffering and ultimately dies doesn't, you know, anytime she speaks it's either doing this big dramatic confession or it's her being like a seductress.
The whole episode, like, and I'm not going to, like, openly criticize this episode for, like, wanton misogyny, because I don't think that's explicitly the point. Like, I mean, Johnny Sims has come out, you know, and apologized for certain things in Magnus. Things like, sort of, like, lazy casual racism, where he, like, came up with a name without really, like, trying. He just sort of selected a lazy Asian-sounding name for some of the characters later on. But it's really weird that this episode, like you say, takes all of the agency out of Harriet. Like, her story is told secondhand to it's an old statement, so at this stage it would have been Gertrude and not Johnny Sims, who was head archivist, but it, you know, he tells it in his thing, in his statement, which is being told to Gertrude and now told to us. But then also at the end, Harriet just explodes into, like, worms, and she's essentially just reduced to nothing. Like, she's no longer there.
Yeah.
She has no agency in the entire thing outside of, like, propagating this worms.
And, like, she doesn't even have given the kind of... I don't want to say dignity because that's not the correct word, but it doesn't even... You know, if you think about something with, like, the dramatic camera, it doesn't even happen on screen, it happens off screen. Where this woman dies, and she dies a horrible death, you can imagine. And you don't even see it, and it's very, like, I don't want to say fridging, because it's not fridging, because you don't have, like, a romantic connection, really. I don't think that's my interpretation of it, anyway. But it's, like, her death is just kind of there to have this, like, horrifying thing happen to Timothy, rather than it being, like, the tragedy of her death is kind of an afterthought.
I can't think of any specific examples right now, but I feel like there definitely are episodes that are all about, like, your death being in vain and not being important, But then it's still the main character realizing it and being the focus of it. Well, here her death feels so unimportant and like second. Yeah, it's not the focus of anything in the story.
She's even dismissed by John, though, in the post statement where he's like, "Oh yes, this matches up with the description of Harriet Lee, who was reported missing shortly after the statement was given, and quite obviously it's a tragic loss of life, etc., etc., etc." But, you know, and then launches into the thing about Jane Prentice. So she, like, in every aspect of it, she's like less than human. Like the narrative has rendered her less than human. She's an object.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is so interesting when you compare it to the other kind of one. In all the other Magnus ones, or not all of them, but a lot of them, you do have like, it's like X person talking about X person. So say like across the street has Amy talking about Graham. And then in Thrown Away, I can't recall the names, but like the main trash man, Kieran, talking about his co-worker that kind of goes postal. Not postal, but kind of jumps off the deep end a bit. But it's always like, there's always a certain amount of agency given to the people they're talking about. And it's just a bit disappointing that the first kind of female character that is talked about by another person is kind of reduced to an object.
Yeah, and I think especially because as the podcast continues, we see that there's plenty of really good women in there. So this feels so out of tone, I guess, compared to the other women we meet.
Yeah.
Yeah, to describe it in less than 5 words, this isn't it, Chief.
To kind of switch topics a little bit, though, all this, since I first heard this episode, I wasn't super impressed by her, like, turning into a bunch of worms. It didn't really fuzz me all that much. But now, a couple of days ago, I lifted up one of the food bowls for the dogs to, like, get food. And I lifted it up, and, like, a whole bunch of ants crawled out from under it. And I'm like, oh god, I really have new appreciation for how fucked up it is.
Yeah.
If you were to suddenly find your entire bedroom coated in worms. Like, no thank you, stay away.
Yeah. Fear is just entirely derived from experience. And yeah, I remember I was going for a walk, and I like live in the middle of the countryside, so I live on this like really small country road, like grass is growing in the middle of it, that kind of country road. And I got to a crossroads, and I decided I'd cut across to the main road, and the road is like shadowed over with trees that like grow up kind of into an arch over the road, and there was like something lying there, and I was like, what is that? And I looked close, like I walked and I looked closer, and it was a dead bird. And I leant closer, and then all of a sudden, this like massive crowd of flies, which had been like on the dead body, just flew up at me. And I'm like, oh no.
Oh, those are scary, man. They really are. Yeah. Especially when you check them, and then there's like a lot of them. No.
That's not fun. Yeah,
there's something strangely alien in like a lot insects. Of tiny things moving in a coordinated effort. Like, we have the term hive mind for a reason, and it's always associated with aliens and the other, like in sci-fi.
It's just, it's not my favorite. It's well done. Again, we've ended up talking about like this episode for so long, and it's almost funny because it's, instead of talking about like the horror of it as we do in most episodes, in terms of like what's creepy about it, we're talking about how the story makes us uncomfortable, not in a like the way you want horror to make you uncomfortable, more in a like we live in a society, to quote the Joker, kind of way.
We sure do, unfortunately.
That's a reference. So yeah,
Oh, I was drinking my Pepsi.
Like, I'm...
Yeah, do you guys have any last thoughts before we move on to spoiler chat, or...?
It's just on that, about, like, how the story makes us feel, but, like, you know, like, we're taking this outside of it, we're looking at it outside of, like, the actual narrative, but when you look at it, like, there is a lot that's also meant there to make you feel uncomfortable. Like, I'm... Mm-hmm. I'm always sort of reticent to, like, as an English student, to to ascribe, like, the feeling a text gives you as something the author wants you to read into it, because it's a theme of the book. Like, people, like, I really, really don't enjoy the book 1984. I find it really boring. And someone tried to tell me, oh, the boring, like, the boredom is part of it because Winston is bored in his daily life. And I'm like, no. It's just a really boring book. But I think I think that Squirm, like, there is a lot in it that's... horror is one of those mediums where everything actually, like, goes towards, like, focusing into, like, each thing sets it up, and then you have the payoff of, oh, this is, like, horrifying. So, like, Timothy Hodges' behavior is really, really, like, awful. And like, makes us uncomfortable because we live in a world, but also, like, the episode takes place in that world, so we have that expectation that makes us uncomfortable. But also, like, all the descriptions, like, how Harriet was writhing instead of dancing, or just that, like, horrifying description of when she explodes, like an egg hitting a stone floor. Like, that's something you can viscerally imagine.
Yeah.
And that's something, like, if you heard a human body do that, oh, no.
You wouldn't be good.
No.
You wouldn't be good. So, yeah, I think with that, we can start to move on into the spoiler zone. So,
banish Hannah.
Banish me, please.
All right. I'll try and do this successful without nearly almost banning you from the server.
Skip ahead to 1 hour and 50 seconds if you wish to avoid series spoilers.
Alright. There we go. It's a spoiler time.
Spoiler time.
There's a lot in this episode. I mean, not a lot, but there's, like, a clear starting point in this one.
Yeah, like... I mean, this is obviously the corruption, right? As fear. And the corruption has always been my least favorite. No, that's not true. Stranger is my least favorite. The corruption also fucks me up. And the whole episode with the worm squirming is just confirming that, like, fuck the corruption.
It's really strange that it's taken 6 episodes to get into. Like this is quite clearly the first the first instance of, like, this is the plot of season 1, but it's taken 6 episodes to get into. And, like, each one is 20 minutes long, so that's like 2 hours it takes to actually get to the plot of season 1. You know, like, the first, you, like, the entities that it goes, you've got Stranger, Buried, Stranger, Vast, Flesh, and now you've got the corruption.
I do like that, though, because, I mean, at this point, we're still very much in a Monster of the Week kind of format.
Yeah.
And it's only, like, in the second half of season 1 that it really starts to be like, oh yeah, Jane Brent is attacking Martin and then going to the Institute and all that. So I like that they didn't just open with it, because this way it's a lot more inconspicuous.
Yeah.
Because now it's like, oh yeah, you've got this weird lady with the worms, and then the next couple of episodes happen, and it's like just one of many. And then when you realize with Jane Prentice and the corruption, and it's like, oh, okay, this episode 6 was the start of it all. You just don't realize it the first time you listen to it. So I really like the setup.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a really clear, like, indication, I guess, at the end of the episode, because for, like, episodes 1 through 3, you know, the post statement is, like, John being like, I've sent out my archival assistants to try and verify some of this, and we've got back, like, one detail we can't explain, but it's very much like, here's a thing that can't be explained. Whereas with the end of episode 4, when he mentions Lightner, and now when he talks about Jane Prentice, it's, here's a thing that I won't explain.
Yeah.
You know, because he's just like, if he's been in contact with a victim of Jane Prentice's, they'd want, like, you know, they'd want to deal with him sooner rather than later. And it's like, okay, this is important.
Yeah. He does, I don't know if it, he does at some point try to shove it off on the infectious disease thing. Like, this isn't supernatural, it's just a disease. But yeah, the effort is way less than in the first couple of...
I'm just trying to imagine that phone call where he had to, like, ring up the ECDC and be like, hey, John Archivist here. So it's a horrible day to be John Archivist. and, you know, like how often do the Magnus Archives have to deal with like non-supernatural affiliated public bodies?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know you have, like, I'm bringing it up here because it is something quite interesting, I guess, to consider, especially when we learn about Section 31 with the police officers like Daisy and Masira. But you have to wonder, how often do they just have to, like, ring up some poor, unsuspecting sod and be like, hey, so there's a guy who is potentially infected with, like, worms, but you want to, like, not like dog worms, but you want to, like, get on that?
Yeah, that's also an interesting thing about this episode, that all the other ones, they're more ended, in a way. I mean, they're not really, but with this one, I got the feeling that Jane Prentice, she's still out there and infecting other people with worms, which is clearly a bad thing. So this is, like, something they really need to get on top of, or someone at least needs to do something about it. The other ones, I feel like there's less that they can do. Like,
it's done.
It was creepy, but it's done, and there's nothing you can do about it anymore. But with this, I feel, yeah, there's more of a call to action in this episode than there has been in all the other ones, I feel.
Yeah, I also wanted to continue what Nigel said with, like, the disease center thingy, CD, whatever. Well, we know the archive obviously has its supernatural part, and we find out later on that the police has its own supernatural group. So do you think that the disease center has, like, people who are regularly like, hey, your girl exploded into worms, might be supernatural, go check it out, please?
They're just kept, like, strictly off books. They're paid, but they're like, we don't like, officially, like, you don't officially work for us.
Yeah, like with the police. Like, the one department that nobody wants to be a part of, because they're all wackos.
Yeah, or like, The supernatural crime unit in Dresden, how no one wants to work alongside Karen Murphy, because that, you know, when you're there that, like, some weird shit is going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like the disease control people might have less reason to actually have a full division assigned to it.
Yeah, how often does it happen that people explode into worms?
Yeah, there's less. I think there would be less instances of actual, like, worms or disease-related horror than there are of with the police. The police has like a wider range of horror they can choose from getting
called. Yeah, the police is called more often to go out.
Yeah. But also, just like in terms of the series, the corruption appears very, very few times. Like, out of all 15 entities, the ones I can think of that appear less, like, the only one that I can think of, actually, is the Extinction, because that one's brought in later on as, like, this is an emerging one. Like, the whole plot of season one is about the corruption and Jane Prentice trying to attack the archives. But after that, there's very little afterwards, you know?
Yes, I appreciate that.
They did it for you.
Yes, thank you, Johnny.
Because the corruption, it's like more than just the worm episodes. I think it's just subtler when it does appear. Maybe it doesn't appear as often as the others, but it's the worms, but there's also the hospital stuff, and anything that has stuff to do with, like, filth. Like that one episode with that widower who gets obsessed with... That's also... corruption.
Yeah, like there's the malaria episode, blood bag, yeah. And there's the one with the dog, Agape.
Yeah.
Isn't there also a whole thing with like a nest of wasps? Is that Prentice?
Yeah, but that's specifically Jane Prentice's backstory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just really weird that there's so little of the corruption.
Yeah, there's a bit of John Amherst, and then... Yeah. But I mean... Maybe it's because they... When did they try their ritual, or have they tried it?
I think Jane Prentice tried it, I guess, because she was trying to open a door to the corruption in, like, within the archives. But aside from that, I don't think there was any, like, historical record of one, and Gertrude certainly didn't try and stop a corruption ritual. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, then I guess if they try their ritual at the end of season one, it would be weird for them to keep showing up very prominently.
Yeah, they're probably like trying to regroup and regain power and that kind of stuff.
Hmm. In terms of, like, broader stuff as well, apart from this being our first direct link into the plot of season one, Timothy Hodge shows up again in episode 26, where Sasha kills him with a fire extinguisher. Yeah, which, like, I'm so glad he gets his comeuppance, but it's really, really funny to me that, like, it's meant to be this big problem, and he's just killed with a fire extinguisher.
Do we have any other spoilers to talk about?
Oh, actually, that episode where Sasha kills Timothy Hodge is the first, like, explicit appearance of Michael.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, like, we have... There's a brief reference to Michael in episode 8, but the first time he, like, properly appears is when he is sort of, like, appearing to Sasha, and then he takes the worm out of her shoulder.
Is this when she's, like, seeing the dude with the big fuck-off hands?
Yeah.
Like, out of the corner of her eye, and then when she's Yeah.
That's the one. It's A Distortion is the name of the episode.
It's been so long since I listened to season one.
I'm looking
forward
to it.
Every time someone goes, oh yeah, this episode is called this, and like, I don't know what happens, and then I listen to the episode, like, oh, I do know what happens.
Yeah.
I just have to, like, put my hands on my temples and be like,
I'm in general very bad at remembering details. Like, major plot lines I can do. Details are not my thing.
Yeah, apart from the fact that this episode is really uncomfortable, I do like the way it sets up the season one arc, or the way it introduces. I mean, James, I like how subtly they introduce James Ventus.
Yeah, and it's a good way to set up the corruption too, because, I mean, literally all we know is, okay, this lady exploded into a bunch of worms.
Yeah.
And there's no other details, no other explanation. It's just, okay, she became worms. That's it. Good luck.
Yeah,
So it immediately makes you, like, crave more information.
Yeah. It took me a really long time to link all the different corruption episodes together.
Oh, like, yeah, me too.
Until they actually explained. I think it was, yeah, it took until they almost... almost until they explained all the different fears to link all of the filth and corruptions. You know, you can tell that there's some, like, connection, but it's the subtlest one because it's such a diverse fear.
In your massive conspiracy theory document.
Yes, exactly.
Mm. I feel like if you still have it,
I have
we
it.
We could post screenshots of it on our Twitter to be like, of like the funny notes you took.
If sure. You have any.
Like, here, this is what Elka thought before she knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Something like, big fuck off hands, question mark.
Oh, yeah, I'll have a it's still on my... I made two, because after listening to episodes... What is it? 100-something, where John gets the explanation of there are this many fears, and, you know, this
is... Yeah, 114 or something.
Yeah, after that, I rearranged the stuff I wrote to match every fear, but I still say I saved the document before I did that, because I want to check how close I was actually figuring it all out.
A true avatar of the eye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd be an excellent archivist, which is not a good thing, but hey.
No. If you were an assistant, Gertrude would have cut you up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd be the head archivist, mainly because I saw a fan art of John, which looked like eerily like me in real life. And I'm like, yeah, that could be me.
Oof.
Anxiety riddled and gay.
Fair, yeah.
I'd be a vast avatar and I would thrive on making, you know, the feel. You know when you're going down the stairs and you think there's another stair and you're actually already at the bottom? I'm gonna make people do that. Just constantly. No. Just anyone who walks down the stairs.
I have enough problems with stairs as is without you tormenting me like that.
I wouldn't torment you, though. We could be avatar buddies.
Aww.
Like, this is entirely off topic of this episode. But isn't there a thing with, what she called? Jude, I think, the Desolation Avatar, who somehow knows where Mike Crew lives? Like, what's up with that?
I think they're just good friends. Like, the whole thing with, like, Simon Fairchild and Mike Crew and stuff. Like, they don't like, it's always eye-aligned people who are having big wars. And that's, I guess, mainly because Gertrude is sending them out. But, like, as long as they don't fuck with one another, they're just happy to get along. It's really like Simon Fairchild sends Peter Lucas to answer Martin's questions because he lost a bet and because Simon doesn't like talking to people.
See, the vast avatars are the coolest. I would fit right in there. Give me Simon Fairchild as my weird grandpa.
Oh yeah, he'll chuck you out of a plane, but
and I'd enjoy it before I die.
Oh yeah. No, I have an actual fear of heights, so no. Just no.
Same.
Oh.
I have a fear of heights and of being out on, like, big open water, so the fast is completely...
I saw a video earlier of one of the big lakes in America, Michigan, I think.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's like, it was frozen over, and then it broke up again. And lots of people are like, oh no, this is like inherently terrifying. I need to get away from this view, even though it was a video. And I was like, oh, I want to go swim in there.
No.
So like,
no.
You're just a crazy person.
Anyway, should we get Hannah back, maybe?
Yeah, because
we're all off topic.
Hannah's probably sitting there going, like,
why is this taking so long?
They're spending far longer this time than the last time.
They must have so many new theories.
Hold on.
You can do it. You can do it, Nigel.
My phone is just not... There we go. Okay.
And check her out of the server.
Yeah, like, it's slowing down again, and I don't want to...
Hello!
Hello, welcome back.
I did it.
I was unmuted, but when you were, like, deafened, I just went,
And undeafened!
Is it time for Hannah's prediction hour?
Yes.
Yes.
I feel like we should make some jingles. One for spoiler hour and one for prediction hour. Just like
nice,
funny
some
jingles.
Nice royalty-free Kevin MacLeod.
Yeah, with like in one of those American radio voices from the 50s, like exaggerated. Spoiler time!
Next up on the radio, ladies and gents, it's spoiler talk. So yes, my predictions. I think worms are going to feature heavily because a lot of attention was paid to them worms. And in the same vein as in Page Turner, where there's like the archivist goes, this name, I think Jane Prentice is going to feature quite prevalently going forward, just because like the fact they talk about, like, there's such an urgency to the way that Johnny talks, or not Johnny, the archivist talks about Prentice's victims, and like the fact it's like, it's, you know, most of the times when he like reads a thing he's like stupid, but this one he's like, oh no, like this is genuinely serious.
Yeah, better
yeah,
get
that soon. Yeah. And there's something mentioned, it's like the ECDC. I have no idea what that is.
European Center for Disease Control.
We looked that up in the last episode, I remember.
Yeah, we keep forgetting it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So yeah,
I think
Prentice.
It's really funny. I think it's really funny just that the they're talking about this one with and the threat is like an infestation of worms, but also like the CDC building in Atlanta in America. That was overrun by zombies and blown up in the first season of The Walking Dead.
Really?
Yep.
These disease control centers just don't have much luck, do they?
No. Not with it's swarms of infectious pseudo-mythical creatures.
Yeah. Zombies are weird because, like, everyone's deeply afraid of a zombie outbreak, but like realistically, it's probably won't happen. That being said, I'm now nearly year one deep into COVID-19. I'm sorry for mentioning it, listeners, and I now do not have hope in humanity.
I really dislike zombies as a horror villain. They're so lame. This is my personal opinion. I really don't like zombies. They're not scary.
Oh yeah, they're so overdone.
Boring.
They're so overdone. But I think
especially the ones that are like super slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what's the point? Just run a little faster, you know?
Yeah, don't
like a brisk walk and you'd be out of there.
Yeah. Just don't get surrounded and you'll be fine.
I walk really, really fast just normally.
Yeah, same.
From talking about it with friends, I think zombies used to be like they were very much a metaphor villain. So it was kind of like a lot of like the early zombies films, they were like a metaphor for communism, which I'm not getting into that. This episode's already like an hour long.
That's another podcast we could do.
We got entirely derailed already during spoiler talk. We don't need to get derailed again.
I was like, geez, there's a lot to go on.
No.
I was like concerned, being like,
No, I just got distracted.
There was one like earlier. There was an earlier spoiler chat on one of the episodes. I think it was 3, and when it was just me and Faust, and we were just talking about Batman.
I can't wait to listen to spoiler talk when we finish the show.
When you're caught up in 13 years.
In 13 years. I like how every single time we record, it gets like exacerbated how long it's going to take for us to finish the show. It's like, I think the first episode was like, yeah, it should take us 2 years. And now it's like, I hope I'm alive by the time we finish.
Maybe we'll be out of quarantine by the time we finish.
Boy, don't get
me wrong.
Do you think we could ever do like a live episode?
Ooh,
just like record with the four of us in a room.
What happens for fucking when I get thrown at the spoiler pitch? I get like bound and gagged and like
we get like really big earmuffs.
You could just leave the room, you know?
No, comically large earmuffs.
Yeah. No, but like Ireland isn't that far.
No.
But also, it's not like we're all in different places either. Hannah and I are both in Dublin, and you and you, Faust and Elka live.
Yeah, not too.
Like presumably,
yeah, it's like an hour by car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd probably take me an hour to get to South Dublin.
All right. You have to go through the border checks. I'm joking.
When we're all free again,
yeah,
that'd be real fun. I'd so be up for that.
Archive admirers on tour.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Room. I'm in my mom's car.
Mommy car. Same though. I can only drive in my mom's car or my brother's car.
Rita.
Okay. Okay. Before we start quoting vintage vines, because it's only episode 6, we have to at least wait till episode 20 to do that. I haven't cast anyone for Timothy Hodge because I don't hate anybody that much to, I don't know, maybe Armie Hammer. That'd be funny.
I feel like...
Yeah, but he doesn't eat Harriet.
Whoever the cannibal is, Armie Hammer. There is ever a cannibal on the show.
I feel like Timothy would be the most generic straight white guy ever.
Yeah. Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah. He's too young.
Yeah, he's too young, but it would be Timothy Chalamet.
What? Oh no, Chris Pratt is too old, though.
No, yeah. Chris Pratt's...
He's a bit old. Yeah, a bit
old. We need to find a happy middle ground between Timothy Chalamet and Chris Pratt.
I will do some research and I will put it on the Twitter by the time this episode comes out. Now is the time in the show where we wrap up and we plug stuff. So if you like our show, you can follow us on whatever platform you're listening to on. I think we are on Apple Podcasts at this stage and Spotify plus whatever else. You can follow us on Twitter at Archive Admirers, and we have an email at archiveadmirers@gmail.com if you want to send us more casting options, because that's something we're going to start doing. Is trying to cast people in every episode. I have. Speaking of finding us on various social medias, Nigel, you have a Twitter.
Yes, I do. You can find me on Twitter at SpicyNigel, where what have I done recently? Won't be recent when you're hearing this, but recently I've confessed how often I cry at the Tears and Rain scene in the original Blade Runner film.
That's a fucking... You know, that was, not off-script, improvised, that whole monologue.
Well, they had originally, kind of a similar draft, but Rutger Hauer was like, this is opera talk, this isn't how people talk. So he delivered most of that, off of his own... Like there was the bit about on the shoulder of Orion, but that was it. And apparently, all of the cast and crew who were there were in tears when he finished when they originally shot it. Which,
that's my mom's favorite movie. And I remember one time, very, very on topic for this episode, we went to see it as a family in the IFI, which is like the Independent Film Institute, or Irish Film Institute in Dublin. It's like a very nice movie theatre, if you're ever in Dublin, go. She went, oh, I love this movie, it's like so romantic, it's one of my favourite movies. And I was like, romantic? And she went, yeah, like, it's such a great love story. And I was like, huh. And then we went, and then we finished seeing it, we were walking to go to Bunsen. Me and like my brother had never seen it before, and he's just like, looks at my mom and it's just like, that's what you think romance is? And she's like, shut the fuck up, the two of you, I don't want to hear anything. For more me telling the dirt about my family members, you can find me on Twitter at @curlycomsci. Where this week, what have I posted about? I don't tweet as often as you, but what I do, I tweeted about the fact it's snowing everywhere in the world but Ireland. So fucking Athens this week.
Not snowing here.
It's little things. Faust, introduce yourself. Well.
Yes, I also have
Faust,
Twitter.
Faust, where can we find you?
Also on Twitter, I've been binging LA by Night the last week, which is a live... It's not live, they're recording people who play Vampire the Masquerade.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been watching it and been tweeting about my thoughts and all of that.
Sounds great.
And Elka?
Well, I'll be impressed if you can find me on Twitter. I'm on there.
The real cryptid. Elka's the cryptid all along.
Yeah, I am actually the... No, spoilers.
That's sort of the vibe of the whole show. It's like every sentence is potentially loaded for like 100 episodes down the line.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's gonna be a like a certain point in this where we're just gonna come on air and I'm just gonna be like, huh? What the fuck is going on? And it's just me like angry ranting for like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Because you're going to hear all these episodes now like for the first time.
Yeah.
Oh.
Spicy. With that, yes. I think we're done. It's, I think this episode's about an hour long.
Hold on, can I just...
It's going to be a half an hour. Yes, Nigel, what's up?
So we originally recorded this episode on the 9th anniversary of T.D. Gogarty yelling, fuck you, Deputy Stag, fuck you, in the Dáil. And
which is our parliament.
Yes, which is our parliament. But now in the Redux, I now have some link so I can stick it at the end of the episode again.
Us done. Anyone want to say anything else? I don't know why I've gone into robot mode.
I just saw a GIF of Megamind, and now I've got the most intense craving to watch Megamind again.
Fuck it.
Best movie
ever. You started saying craving there, and I was like, I'm with you, you're going to eat some, and you were like, Mega, and I was like, you're going to eat Megamind, and then my brain went, hold on a minute.
No, it's Armie Hammer who eats people, not me.
God damn it. This is the second time we've brought up Armie Hammer being a cannibal. How long, cold fading death? How long?
But we haven't brought up bees.
Oh! This is the perfect episode to bring up the bees.
We haven't mentioned that even bees. You know the, the My Chemical Romance, I'm Not Okay music video where it's like, you like D&D Fangoria. Like, you like Danny DeVito, bees, Armie Hammer.
You can't and sing, D&D. You can't dance.
It's correct, we all do like D&D.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just wait until the Wasps episode, Hannah. We're gonna go absolutely wild on the bees.
There's fucking wasps?
Oh boy.
There's a bee!
Bye, everybody. We will see you when we see you. Probably in a week. Maybe two. We haven't decided yet because we're recording a few of these in front. That's why some of the times when we talk about on the show, we're referring to memes that happened 6 months ago. But, okay. See you next week. See you next
bye.
Time.
Bye.
Well, all due respect and the most unparliamentary language, fuck you, Deputy Stagg. Fuck you.
Hey,